Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
It's Monday the 20th of March. It's nearly springtime. No, it is springtime. The clocks go forward next week. We're excited. I'm excited. You're excited. I'm Jamie East.
And I'm Chris Mandel.
And this is Dragoncast. Welcome. As I'm trying to give a bit of zhuzh. We're at season 6, episode 5 of Game of Thrones rewatch, and I kind of try not to kind of lull into the mid-season kind of lull. It felt like, I don't know. How's your week been anyway, before we get into it?
Really good week. Yeah. Really, really good week. What happened? Not a lot, but it was good. It was good.
Nice.
Working on a couple of small stories and just, yeah, I feel good at the moment. I feel very sort of like the cobwebs have been blasted
nice.
Out. And yeah, how about you?
You know why that is? It's because for half an hour last week, we all felt the sun on our face. That's what it is.
I know. Yeah.
You know, it makes such a fucking difference. It really does.
How's your week been?
Good. Busy. It's the 1,000th episode of the Smart 7 podcast on Thursday.
Oof.
Or Friday,
which congratulations.
Is quite a big milestone, really. There aren't many podcasts that make it to 1,000. We've done it in spite of the listenership. No, we've done it because of the listenership.
It doesn't look a day over 900, I have to say.
No, it's been a long one. But you know, so we did a big survey for that we're kind of releasing. So it's been busy kind of building up to that. Mm-hmm. What else has been going on? Starting to think about Succession starts on Monday.
Yeah.
Which we're excited about.
I can't believe that's come around so fast.
Really quickly, hasn't
it? It's just barreled towards us. And yeah, I'm so excited. Are you?
I am. But I like it. You know what it feels like? You remember as a kid, how long Christmas took to arrive. It was just painful. Mm-hmm. And now, as an adult, when no one really buys you that many presents and it's not that exciting, and you know the thing about the guy in the red suit, it just arrives really, really quickly and then just goes really quickly. There's none of the magic there. This is in that sweet spot where you're probably about, I don't know, 14, 15, where life speeds up a little bit and you kind of go, oh my God, is it Christmas next week? But you've still got all of the good stuff as well. It feels like that with Succession. I feel like I've really done well to not think about it and kind of drive myself kind of crazy.
That's the key, is to sort of put it away in a dark recess of your brain. And then when it comes along again, you're sort of like, oh shit, like this is so exciting.
Exactly.
I forgot how excited I was about it.
And I think it's because streamers have really nailed their scheduling. I do think that there's some kind of Mason's Lodge kind of secret meet. You know, we hear about the meeting between Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk in the Lodge that Succession kind of satirized. I think there's one with like schedulers of Disney, of Apple, of Netflix, of all, where they go, right, so you got Mandalorian, you do Mandalorian, then that doesn't really clash with Slow Horses season 2 because they're two separate audiences. Netflix, what are you doing? Oh, we were going to do Lock and Co. That work. Do you mind doing that next week? Because we got the because it just seems to slot in perfectly.
I agree.
Know what I mean?
We were watching Fleischman is in Trouble, which is on Disney Plus, which is based on the novel by Taffy Baronessa Akner. And that all got dropped at once, but we were watching it kind of once or maybe twice a week. So like that has been a big sort of thing early this year for us. And then that's finished and it's like, oh, Succession starting. And like, it just feels like there's a rhythm that I think is really, really sort of pleasing, isn't it?
It is pleasing. It's satisfying because there's a lot less FOMO at the moment.
Yeah, 100%.
There's some stuff where you kind of go, that's not my thing. That's not my bag. Mm-hmm. I haven't started watching the Mandalorian season 3 yet because my son doesn't like waiting a week. Bloody kids.
Right.
So we're waiting for that to kind of like to build up. Really enjoyed it. It's been a good week, and it does kind of feel like maybe the sunshine's on the way. And it's quite tragic how much of a difference it makes to your mood, but it really, really does lift the spirits, doesn't it?
100%. And I think like I haven't actually watched The Mandalorian. I drive that show. It's not getting great reviews, is it, this new season?
No, I think it's going to suffer from, well, okay, we can't just do another Baby Yoda. They've ridden two, well, the first season was basically just about the cuteness of the puppet. Mm-hmm. Second season was, they had this amazing, they did it really well. The kind of, they bridged a kind of era with young Luke Skywalker. And that was great. That was done really, really well too. Now it's kind of like, well, what do they do with it now? Where is this story leading? I think that's one of the inherent problems is when you start off with like a side story that kind of relates to X, Y, Z, but doesn't really, is like, you can't keep plugging it into the main canon to pay fan service to it, because it just cheapens it and it gets a bit. Also,
I think the season 2 problem though was they said, look, Luke Skywalker's kind of always, there's always the potential that he'll pop in now, right? Or that it's leading up to something. And I think they've locked into this thing now where people expect a big moment like that. And it's like, if it's just the Mandalorian having a little, going into a new town and sorting out the bad guys. I just don't know. I think it just feels like they don't quite have a plan. And
no, exactly.
It's just an interesting, if you do TV, you've got to know how many seasons, why you're doing it, where feels exactly. A bit like they're running on fumes.
Which is a neat segue into today's Game of Thrones rewatch. We've jumped ahead. Last week we did season 5, episode 10. What was it called? Not The Winds of Winter.
Mother's Mercy.
We've leapt through, only 4 episodes, but it feels like a lot more. Let's take a breath. Let's give everyone the recap from, you know where we're going with this. Mm-hmm. 5-minute recap with previously on. See you in a sec.
We begin with Sansa and Brienne meeting Littlefinger in a town near Castle Black. Littlefinger insists he had no idea what Ramsay was capable of when he arranged his marriage to Sansa. To make amends, he offers Sansa the Knights of the Vale in her fight to take back Winterfell, but she rejects him. Before they leave, Littlefinger reveals that Sansa's uncle, Brynden Tully, aka the Blackfish, has taken over Riverrun. In Braavos, Jaqen H'ghar gives Arya a new target, Lady Crane, an actress who's portraying Cersei Lannister in a play about the Seven Kingdoms. Arya watches the play, but she's upset by its depiction of Ned Stark as an idiot and traitor. After watching her target backstage, Arya decides to poison her rum, which pleases Jaqen. In a vision, Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven see the Children of the Forest create the Night King by stabbing a man through the heart with dragonglass. Bran angrily confronts Leif, who says they had no choice, they were at war with the First Men and needed to defend themselves. At the King's Moot in Pyke, Yara Greyjoy declares her right to rule the Iron Islands with Theon by her side. At first she wins over the crowd, but her uncle Euron Greyjoy arrives and stakes his own claim. Euron admits to murdering Balon Greyjoy, his brother and Yara and Theon's father, but the Ironborn don't care. Euron says he'll marry Daenerys Targaryen and conquer Westeros with her. The Ironborn choose Euron over Yara as their leader, forcing the brother and sister to flee with some of the Ironfleet's best ships. In Vae's Dothrak, Jorah tells Daenerys he has greyscale and confesses his love for her. Daenerys tearfully orders Jorah to find a cure for the disease and then return to her side, as he is too important to her to die. A fragile peace has taken hold in Meereen since Tyrion's pact with the Masters. Tyrion summons Kinvara, a Red Priestess, and asks her to spread the word that Daenerys has ended the violence. Kinvara agrees because she believes Daenerys is the prince or princess that was promised, aka the Lord of Light's chosen one. That's who Melisandre thought Stannis was. Look how well that turned out. When Varys is openly hostile to her, Kinvara reveals that she knows why Varys was castrated. Beyond the wall, Bran decides to use the weirwood tree without the three-eyed raven. Bran then has a vision of the White Walker army, and as he passes the Night King, he grabs Bran's arm. Bran wakes up with the Night King's handprint on his arm. The three-eyed raven tells Bran the Night King now knows where he is, and he'll be able to break the magic spell protecting them and enter the cave. It's now time for Bran to become the three-eyed raven. At Castle Black, Jon, Davos and Sansa discuss potential allies in the fight for Winterfell. Davos tells Jon he needs to give the Northern Lords a reason to join them beyond loyalty to the Starks. Sansa suggests that with Brynden and Tully's forces, they could attract the rest of the North and create a formidable army. Sansa sends Brienne to Riverrun to make contact with the Blackfish while she joins Jon and their advisors on the road. Eddison is left in charge of Castle Black. Good luck, Ed. As the three-eyed raven transfers his knowledge to Bran, the White Walkers attack the cave. Bran has a vision of Winterfell and sees a young Hodor, who was then known as Willis and could speak normally. Mira and Hodor try desperately to get Bran out as the Children of the Forest defend them from the White Walkers. Bran stays in the vision, but also wargs into Hodor, who takes Bran's body outside the cave. The Night King kills the three-eyed raven, and as they escape through the tunnels, Summer and Leaf sacrifice themselves to hold off the Whites. They reach the exit, and Mira tells Hodor to hold the door while they escape. Bran hears Mira's words in the vision and loses control as he wargs into Willis, the young Hodor. Willis has a seizure and starts repeatedly shouting, "Hold the door!" which eventually slurs into Hodor. Thanks to Bran, Willis witnessed his own death and his brain was irreversibly damaged, turning him into Hodor. And in the present, Hodor is torn apart by Whites as he blocks the exit, allowing the others just enough time to escape. Good night, sweet prince.
Ah, thank you very much, Jamie. What a voice. He should be on. He should do like Honda adverts or something.
A voice like caramel, I think.
Caramel dripping on your tongue.
Lovely. Oh. Lovely.
So yeah, like I said before that, only jumped ahead four episodes, yet so much has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Jon Snow, last thing we saw was Jon Snow bleeding out in the snow. Obviously, he came back to life in episode two, The Other, I think it was called, The Others, yeah. Or something like that.
I think it was Home. Episode two is called Home.
Oh, Home. So what else has happened?
Okay, so Daenerys was kidnapped and has rescued.
Yeah.
In very quick succession. Arya was blind, but now she can see.
I'm sure it's a lyric from an Adele song.
Yeah.
I was blind, now I can see. What? Hang on, that is a lyric from a song.
It's a hymn.
I was blind, now I can see. Yeah.
Theon has gone back to Pike?
To Yara. Yeah.
I don't remember why, but he has. And...
Well, Moving On Up by Primal Scream. I was blind, now I can see. You made me all out of me. There you go, that's Arya's... sorry, carry on. Didn't Theon go to kind of try and solidify the Ironborn, the Greyjoys, to bring them back into the Sansa fold? I can't really remember.
I think that's the sort of loose logic, but, like, they are the family that, like, the Greyjoys came and just ransacked Winterfell. They've always been schemers. I feel like maybe Theon says, I need to go back to my family or something.
Yeah.
I think it's more like, I owe it to her. I've let the family down. It must be something like that, because they just need to get him out of the way. We'll get into all the separate storylines, but the Greyjoy one, for me, I just really struggled to care about it. But generally, I thought it was a really, really good episode. It was the thing that I already thought with season six is that it's quite lean. Like, it's not oversaturated by, like, we've got to check in with everybody. It felt like they knew what to include and what to leave out. And I feel like it's quite pleasing to watch. It feels like everything's moving at quite a nice pace.
Yeah. It you're right, because there was nothing was really rushed, and yet I think we had most people in it. We didn't have any King's Landing stuff in. That's right. But aside from King's Landing, we covered a lot. Now, King's Landing is all, that's because over in King's Landing right now, they're preparing for Cersei's trial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we obviously know what Cersei's planning for as well. Let's go back to the start then. Should we tell people we've got a secret person coming up?
Yeah, we should.
Listeners, we've got a secret person joining the chat in about half an hour's time. It's very exciting. Relevant to your interests.
Yeah.
So, started off with Sansa making John his new cloak, as you do. Glad to see she's broken free of the patriarchy.
And, love that they have a sewing kit at Castle Black.
With a lovely little, little Stark sigil to emboss into leather. That was
a
like
a little leather stamp.
She got that off Etsy. They're everywhere on Etsy.
She got a raven to drop it off, yeah.
Wasn't there something poignant about Sansa being a seamstress, or is it just like a thread that she started off like, didn't like Ned and Catelyn kind of like, oh, she's such a good, like, she's great at sewing or something. That was her kind of like designated kind of like role in the Stark family, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Arya, she sort of named her sword Needle, ironically, because it was long and thin, and that's girls right. weren't, and it was like her needle.
Girls so weren't supposed to sew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And there is that a thing that maybe was last season or this season where Sansa starts wearing a lot of quite ugly jewelry. And, you know, she has that chain that kind of goes in a loop and down. And I remember someone on the show said in some featurette, like, oh, this is her. Like needle, you know, it's like all very, it's quite heavy handed, but yeah. So she's kind of keeping herself busy. So she's escaped Winterfell with Theon.
Yeah. Met up with ankles Brienne. Intact. Yeah.
Yeah. Got to Castle Black. Theon has gone down to Pyke. Brienne is kind of her, she's been accepted into Sansa's service, which is nice because it mirrors Catelyn doing the same. Brienne's fulfilled her sort of promise initially to look after the Starks.
Yeah.
And Sansa gets a letter from Littlefinger, who is in Molestown, which is the little village near the wall, which is full of like sex workers and not much else.
We're reminded that Littlefinger exists as well. I can't remember the last time we met Littlefinger in this rewatch.
He's been absent for a while.
Yeah, him and Bran. We have been kind of gone for a long time. Where has he been?
He made Sansa go to marry Ramsay.
Yeah.
He then went down to King's Landing and said to Cersei, like, oh my God, she's married Ramsay. Wasn't me. I wasn't involved. But then he was like, if you let me retake Winterfell from the Boltons and name me Warden of the North, I want to marry Sansa. I think that's his plan.
Okay.
So he is playing
everyone off
the
pitch. That was it. Yeah.
And at the Eyrie, I think, I can't remember what's going on there, but
it was a great scene between Sansa and Littlefinger. I must say, the writing in this episode was absolutely fucking brilliant. Like, really, really good. Like, not just the actual words, but just the plotting, and especially when we get down to the door later on. You know, just really, really nice. And the scene between Sansa and Littlefinger was just great. Great performance from Sansa, from Sophie Turner. And Aiden is just, what a fucking actor. He's just
He's amazing.
He's just,
it all feels like, it all feels grounded in, like, every character has a viewpoint and they all think they're right and they're all trying to sort of justify their actions, and I think it's superb. This is the season where there are bits that I've been in the books, but this is the one that's off piece. This is the one that is like, and I think you can really tell because they're not having to sort of go, well, we need to do this.
Yeah, it's just like, well, let's see where this leaves.
And it just feels, I think, to your point, like the writing, it's very like, what would these characters do if they were put in a room together?
Yeah.
That feels like the basis for a lot of these scenes, and that's why they work. And I thought, we've been wanting Sansa to like let rip and tear a piece off Littlefinger. Brienne is amazing when she's like, the lady asked you a question.
Yeah, just a subtle grip of Oath Keeper. Yeah,
but there's also just a great amount of development. He's right. He goes, your uncle has snuck back into River Run, is doing a siege. He's got a huge army. They'll fight for you. They won't fight for John. Mm. And she starts to develop her own agency, which is like, okay, I want Winterfell. I don't want John to take it. And so she starts to think about having her own pieces on the board. And I think it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
To watch it all kind of fall apart, especially because she doesn't tell John how she knows about Littlefinger's, about the information.
Yeah, so take me through that, because if like me, you didn't have time to watch 1, 2, 3, or 4, Brienne said to Sansa at the end of that, why didn't you tell Littlefinger, why did you lie about River Run? Can you just remind everybody what that lie was?
So
I love how I just treat you like my own wiki.
Yeah, friends. Yeah, no, fine. So when they're having a sort of war meeting at Castle Black, it's Davos, Brienne, Sansa, John, and sort of are trying to figure out how they could retake Winterfell. And a lot of the big families in the north have pledged to the Boltons, like the Karstarks and the Umbers. But there are some houses that are much smaller, like the Mormonts, that they think if they can get to all the small houses, they might be able to pull together enough men.
Yeah.
And Sansa points out that even though River Run is not in the north, it is sort of like the Midlands. Catelyn was part of the Tullys, and so they're quite loyal to, you know, the daughter of Catelyn Stark.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, if we get Uncle Brynden, if we send someone to like parley with him, we might be able to get them on our side. And then we've got people coming in from the south, which is going to help us trap the Boltons.
Yeah.
And they ask why she knows that. And she says, oh, I saw it. Ramsay sent a letter at Winterfell. So she doesn't want to know. She doesn't want them to know that she met Littlefinger in secret.
Gotcha.
Because she sort of rode off to Molestown herself.
Ah, yes.
And she doesn't trust John with that information, because she thinks, I imagine that John will want to kill Littlefinger or arrest him, or
John will want to do the admirable kind of like moral thing, and she's already starting to prove herself a little bit. Actually, that we need to play the long game here.
Yeah, she knows that the Blackfish and the Tullys won't support John.
Right.
He is a bastard.
Yeah.
He's Ned's bastard. He's no relation to Catelyn. He's also technically the Lord Commander of the Night Watch.
Yeah.
It's just too many unknowns, whereas she's got a strong claim.
And
I think it's just a real, it's complicated, and I think it's a very compelling and it was just good. I think that scene where like Davos and Brienne and Sansa and John, really just great, you know. Davos is great. He says to Sansa, look, I might not know the north, but I know that men do not want their family getting slaughtered, skinned alive, killed if they can avoid it. It's not, we have to be smart about this.
Yeah, and Melisandre's still there as well, sat in the background.
She was in that scene, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was sat there at the table, weirdly. Mm-hmm. She's bought herself some time. Well, not from Davos, I wouldn't imagine, but bought herself some time, mainly for bringing John back to life. But
Yeah, and even Brienne said, you know, her and Stannis are like not to be trusted. Mm. But it's her that brought back John. So there's an element of like,
why did she do that? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we jump off to Braavos. Great.
Oh.
Love this whole bit. It was just beautiful.
That, so good.
They do plays so well. I mean, like theatre in Game of Thrones, whether it's at Joffrey's wedding, whatever it is, I love these little tourneys, these little kind of like events that they have on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they really go to tell, like, you can tell that the production designers and the set designers and the art department just really, oh, fucking great, we can make this guy kind of look a bit like Tyrion. And it's like,
I love how warped they don't quite look right. It's almost like, you know, the people that draw caricatures in like Covent Garden.
Yeah, spit and
like
image puppets kind of. Yeah,
always slightly skewed.
Yeah.
Because they might not, you know, they wouldn't know what Ned Stark looks like,
exactly.
Any of these people. So it's all a bit funhouse mirror.
And it's also,
and I think you're right. I think, sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, directly, you know, Marvel nicked this idea for a lot of there are scenes in like Thor
3
where they have like Matt Damon playing Loki stuff like that. It's all a direct lift from this. Yeah,
it's really clever, and I think there is one in House of the Dragon, but I don't think it was as effective because it was so like it was really dark, and I remember feeling at the time like we hadn't had enough time with these characters to get to parody them. Whereas this season six, it's like they're telling it wrong, and the joy is to sort of pick up on the things they get wrong the details. Yeah. And also just this idea that this far across the ocean, like none of them really care. They're all the laughing stock. Like Ned, who is really moral and a good man, is seen as like a northern,
Northern buffoon. Yeah, as most. exactly. Wonderful.
And they also play it that like Tyrion's the one that wanted Ned to get executed.
Well, that was it. That's Joffrey what I. Was innocent. This is like, and this is. This is pretty true to historical fact. Is how these it's propaganda, and this is like the equivalent of the sun being sold on the street corner of whereby this would have been written. This play would probably have been written by someone under the decree of Cersei, which would have then been the scripts and the travelling circus and theatre groups would have then just like branched out from that. You know, it's like something being played at the National and then going to do a local tour. It's exactly that. So it's really cleverly done. I love it.
And also, even if like, you know, no matter, they only know what they see, which is Joffrey's dead, Ned's dead, Tyrion's sort of escaped.
So everything's like, well, malleable.
Yeah. And I think it's really effective. I think the costumes look incredible. Like Robert's guts.
Yeah, just being, yeah,
they look
exactly
like loads
that.
Of red socks filled with paper. You know, it's really good.
It was brilliant.
And I actually just love that these characters, like Lady Crane, they're in a few episodes. I think they're in two or three episodes, or maybe just one more. But it's really great. I think Arya's. Just, I love how she looks different. She dressed as like a Bravosi.
Girl. She's really get stuck into it. Is this how William and Harry watched The Crown? Do you think? Like they start off smiling at the beginning, kind of like, and it's like, oh no, that's not
that's
right.
Oh god,
they think my dad's a buffoon. You know,
exactly. It's really fun, and she's told she has to kill Lady Crane. Someone has paid the House of Black and White to do it. She doesn't really want to do it. She seems like, I think she comes to sympathise with her, that, you know.
Well, I think this is the turning point for Arya, really, in the back of her mind, why she never really ever fully becomes no one. Because she's just kind of like, as I wrote down, it's just like, this fucking religion's a load of bullshit, you know.
I mean,
and Jack in the Hagar made a good point where he's just like, "Does death only come for the wicked?" Which is true. No, death doesn't. Death comes for everyone, and that's what we, you know, that's everyone's cross to bear. But this isn't the same thing, Jack. And someone clearly, the actress that wants to become famous has paid you to off the thing. There's no moral. You can't take the moral high ground on here. And I think Arya is just kind of like. Well, okay, but that's bullshit, mate, you know?
And also she was like, I want to be a killing machine, but I can justify why I'm killing these people on my list.
These feel
like, there's a bit of a propagandist bent to it, which is like, I don't really know if I agree with, these people haven't harmed me personally. And it's that personal connection to the deaths that sort of powers her. So the idea of doing it like no context murders just seems to not really like register with her.
Yeah.
And I was looking actually this morning on, you know, because we were talking a bit about, I think in the last episode, how it works with the masks and stuff.
Yes, that's
and
right. There was a little bit of explanation.
I was reading up about it, and there's some stuff on the, like the Wiki of Ice and Fire, which is the sort of book Wikipedia, that what they do is they, because, you know, they're always washing the bodies and preparing the bodies of the dead, and they basically cure the skin of the faces.
Right, into like this porcelain, like you would, kind of like.
Like sort of like face leather, you know, they sort of cure it. And then what they do is they cut their own face and the blood helps seal it onto their face, which is how it looks so seamless.
Wow.
And there's obviously a little bit of magic involved as well, and it's all a bit, you know.
Wow, okay.
But
so
even
they use
if
it
you
like
have
a,
like,
yeah, okay. like a
even if
group.
You have, yeah, yeah. But even if the person has crooked teeth or a missing, you know, ear or whatever, because of the magic and because of the, there's a lot of belief involved, I think it is able to, you can sort of embody that, and it's really interesting. It's just,
see, whenever I watch it, I just think of that woman with the chimpanzee face. I know it's not the same thing, but that took doctors 16 hours.
Yeah, awful. It's really, I think all of this House of Black and White stuff, I'm enjoying it so much more this time around.
Maybe that's because we're only getting it in short hits.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there are certain things throughout this episode where I was just like, what's going on? Oh, yeah, okay, well, that's quite, yeah, I like this now. Mm. But then I can remember at the time, and I think maybe it was Jorah, it was probably Jorah and Danny bit. But it's just like, oh, for fuck's sake, mate, would you just stop being such a wet twat?
Yeah.
You know, just like, because it was like 5-10 minutes every single week, and it just wound me up. And I'm just like, no wonder she friend zones him. He's the most tragic cuck
I've
ever met.
He's so tragic.
Yeah.
I think also, yeah, I think the stuff with Arya going blind, it was sort of like she goes blind just so that she can have it restored. And I think I'm glad we missed out on that because I'm not that interested. But I think also the storyline, again, it's written for the show. It's written for where she, you know, what they want to do with her, which is culminating in her leaving at the end of this season. So I just think with fresh eyes, it's like this is just good storytelling.
Yeah. And well, they need to build her into this hardened, slightly indoctrinated assassin figure who's slightly aloof to the whole Stark kind of like way of life, and because ultimately they know, I think, and this is a question, I guess, is that it's like at this point now they must have known that they were going to end it in season 8.
I think so.
And also will have known where they want everyone to end up. So, there was no, like you say, we left season 5, the books ended. Now is when the writers, rightly or wrongly, and we're not getting into that debate yet, kind of decided, right, okay, well, this is where we want John to ultimately end up. This is where we want Arya to end up. That person's not going to make it. This one's going to make it, blah, 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 blah. And so, and you look at all of this and you can see a lot of that starting to happen. You know, especially with Bran, who just, you know, oh my God, he wound me up this episode. But and with Yara, and with Theon, you know, and Euron as well, which we can talk about. Shout out to, I'd completely forgotten that Richard E. Grant was in this.
I completely forgot.
I was like, my God, that guy with the northern accent sounds like Richard E. Looks like Richard. Oh my God, it is. Oh shit, of course it's Richard E. Grant. Kevin Eldon played Ned Stark.
I know.
I love him so much. And if you don't know Kevin Eldon, please go and watch the episode of I'm Alan Partridge where he plays a massive racist with an annoying laugh. So well.
He's really good in Nighty Night as well.
He's just got such a Rowan Atkinson style face, hasn't he?
Richard E. Grant, though, just absolute like dynamite. Like, you know, I remember he was cast and everyone was like, who's he going to play?
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, he's going to play.
He's like playing himself.
A campy theatre darling in Bravos.
Yeah.
You're like,
because
okay,
of course he is.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Exactly.
Brilliant.
Great. And the actress, the young actress, is fucking, could they not cast Cheryl Cole? She'd have done it for 20 quid.
She just looked
like Cheryl. Cheryl.
She either reminded me of that Phoebe Denver from Bridgerton. She had a sort of touch of that about her, you know? I think that's all really, really exciting. And
and
really
a big cock shot as well. Big, flaccid, floppy cock shot.
So my question is, I think we've talked about floppy cocks on this podcast more than once.
I would imagine so.
That won't be the actors. That'll be the close-up will be someone else, right?
I don't know. I guess it depends. I think this was probably just about pre-intimacy coordinator.
I also think it looked a bit fake. But I didn't pause to look in or anything.
I mean, it just looked like a bit of a regular gnarled-up cock to me. But I don't know. Who knows? I mean, well, maybe we can ask the actor. Maybe we'll find out.
Yeah.
But I think it was pre-intimacy coordinators because there was a gratuitous tit shot just after that as well. For no reason, that woman's got her breasts out.
Sure.
But But, you know, but I love the fact they were just like, right, we've got to address the criticism of female nudity. Right, let's just have a close-up of a massive cock and balls now. Just to, that will shut them up.
Am I right in saying like, it had absolutely no bearing on the storyline? It was just,
no, it was just like an opening set. Oh, my God, I've got wart. They'll be there for years. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, fine.
I was like,
all this magic, and you can get rid of grayscale. You can't ice off a genital wart. Come on.
I know.
And then we jump to, obviously, the greatest storyline of the whole of the Game of Thrones, which is Three-Eyed Raven, Night King War, which, as we now know, leads towards a spectacular episode finale. But we saw the shot of the Children of the Forest creating the Night King.
Yeah, creating... I
don't know if I understood at the time the significance of all of that, because it was told... I wasn't a big fan of the Children of the Forest either as like characters or even the way they were kind of portrayed or performed, really. They felt a bit kind of like a bit hobbity, a bit Lord of the Rings kind of.
Yeah,
like,
and it's also
speak
like,
to the wise tree people. It's just like...
And it's a bit like, I'm sorry, guys, why didn't you tell me any of this? Did you not think this was relevant to just tell us? Like, oh, by the way, we are the reason... They're being terrorized.
I'd have been more interested. What was missing there was, maybe it was cut, maybe it was written and not put in, was them explaining to the viewer why, yes, they could create the Night King. They kind of explain that to protect us from men, but then why can't you stop him? If you know, you've got to explain that as well. Why is that magic? Why did that magic overpower you and become, you know, it's a couple of lines.
I think
of,
it's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
I think this is the one area, even in season six, where they're a bit like, we don't know.
Just
we can't explain it.
Can we just? This was George's problem, and I think, when I was watching, I was like, yeah, this is the kind of thing you kind of like, you write, you think I'll come back to that, and never do, and then someone's like, but why did the Night King blah blah blah? And you go, oh fuck! I just kind of wrote it down really quickly and never really thought about that bit.
Yeah, and also it's like, how does it work? Like, you know, how does it work?
Because it didn't even look like obsidian that they used. It didn't look like dragon glass. It just looked like regular fucking children.
And it must have been because that. But then it's like that created them and it kills them, which I sort of fail safe switch kind of thing. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's like, do they can they tell them? Could they tell them what to do? Was it a bit like a, you know, like, is it like, can they?
But that's what I mean. What was the point? It seemed like a stupid thing to do if you were just kind of like, it's a bit like, it's introducing an invasive species into your garden to.
It's that kind of
thing. It's like, oh, shit. If I plant this Japanese knotweed here, that's really going to get, that'll get rid of the mint. That's like taking over the vegetable like, patch. It's like, oh shit, now I can't sell my house, you know.
Yeah, it's like, what's the ones with, is it mongoose and snakes? Where you get mongoose.
Yeah.
So then you're like, oh my God, I've got too many mongooses now, so I'm going to have to get.
And you end up like with like 60 horses living there outside your house to kill the fucking
wolves,
foxes. Just... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is a confusing thing. And I think also, you know, we haven't watched any of, obviously, Bran yet, with his new sort of learning to how to use his powers. But I think it is worth just jumping back to what I remember from this season is that he's wants to go and explore everything. And the Three-Eyed Crow is like, you got to pace yourself. You can't learn everything yet. So when he realizes that the Three-Eyed, what did I call it? Is it?
Three-Eyed Raven.
I'm going to get told off. Three-Eyed Raven.
Yeah.
He's asleep or, I don't know, remembering his last... long-haul vacation he went on while he's asleep or something. Bran throws the stone, doesn't respond. He's like, right, I'm going to go wandering. And instead of just wandering in like specific memories, which is what Three-Eyed Raven was doing with him, he was showing him, I think he was trying to show him how Jon is actually Lyanna and Rhaegar's son, right?
Could have just told him, literally, by the way,
pen and paper, here's what you need to know. But Bran doesn't really know how to use the roots and the warging into the trees, so he ends up just going straight outside, present day, gets caught, and then it just fucks everything.
Oh,
so
shit,
it's
happens,
it all happens in a bit of a rush, but it is. I mean, it's like, I mean, I still have so many questions about why the Night King, we know the Night King wants to kill Bran at the end, right?
Well, I've written that. I can't remember. So why does he want to kill the, so he just wants to kill the three-eyed Raven, but for again,
yes,
again,
yes.
This brings us back to the children, the forest, creating the Night King. It's never really that fleshed out why the Night King has such a fucking hard on for anyone. It's like, yeah, he's like bad and he wants to take, yeah, rah, I want evil to reign over the world forever. Yeah, which is like such a boring trope. And it's such a shame that, is it, you know, he just wants to get rid of the Three-Eyed Raven because the Three-Eyed Raven knows stuff. And, yeah, and that seems like such a shite reason to take over the world. It's just like, and they,
yeah,
and I just think a bit of a lazy one as well, because George R.R. Martin is so good at creating reasons and twists and plot lines. And I just feel like this, the main plot line for the whole of Game of Thrones is probably its weakest plot line. It's just like, oh, he just wants to take over the world because the Three-Eyed Raven knows things and knowledge is power.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, that's so.
He wants to wipe out humanity, and the best way to do that is to get rid of the Three-Eyed Raven, who knows everything.
Who's Wikipedia, yeah.
And it's like, it makes so much more sense as an abstract thing, because winter is coming, is like, there's climate change analogies. Yeah. Some of the winters, and the one that is about to happen on the show, which the show sort of says, like, winter's about to start, and then it sort of doesn't. But anyway, this winter is supposed to last, like, a generation. Like, it's supposed to, like, But then when it's like embodied in these actual ice men, you're like, oh, but actually you're actually quite easy to kill and you don't speak and you have no feelings. And it is, as you said, there's just not a lot of the humans on this show. And the
it's the same baddie problem that most shows have. It's just like, how do you
every
solve
Marvel character?
How do you solve the baddie
Marvel
who's movie. Just like an egotistic kind of like crazy person? Anyway, listen, we'll come on to like the door stuff. But before we do, because we'll probably talk about that with our special guest, I would imagine. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about Euron Greyjoy. So don't go anywhere. Here's a quick word from our sponsors.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back, Dragoncast. Me, Jamie East, and...
me, Chris Mandel.
Here we are talking about Season 6, Episode 5, The Door of Game of Thrones. We'll come to The Door very, very shortly. But we first of all went to the Iron Islands and saw the rebirth of Euron Greyjoy. Now, I can remember being quite excited that Pilau was joining because I loved him in Borgen. And his character has not aged well for me at all. He's in the books, right?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
As a, like a really evil bastard, which most people are in the books, let's be frank.
Yeah.
But again, suffered from twirly moustache, Terry Thomas baddie kind of syndrome here a bit. It didn't get any better either. You know, the whole
Big
cock, I'm gonna go over to Daenerys with my big cock. And you know, it's just
I think it's just a very it's just not compelling. Is it really? But no, I think it's in the books. This is a storyline in the books, but they've done it much later. It's in the fourth books as well. All the stuff is happening in Dawn. They obviously couldn't do it concurrent with how it happens. So they've sort of moved it into season six. But, you know, we just know, I mean, it just feels like we just know it doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of what I find hard to
yes, I
deal
think
with
so.
With this is it's just boring. I think the Greyjoys are boring. Right?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think, you know, it made me miss the sea snakes. I was watching this thinking, Mike, has the dragon
the
really got...
Snakes.
The sand snakes? No, the sea snakes from House the Dragon.
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon.
So
yeah.
Where I was just kind of like, they really nailed the kind of naval fleet, kind of like the power. You really felt the power of the ships had. And you never really got that from Game of Thrones because
no.
The ships were just like... And case in point, you know, Euron's kind of like, he was reborn, kind of like came back to life and he was like... Build me 1,000 ships, cut down every tree. And it's like to 20 people. It's just like, who?
Yeah.
It's like, they must also be thinking, how much are we getting overtime or what? You know?
Well, yeah, I found that really annoying because it's like, I'm sorry, do you have any idea how big a ship is?
Well, it's like you saw in the distance at least, what, 150 ships going off into the distance? And it's like, never mind, we'll build more. And it's just like, well, how long would that take?
It must take ages. And the other thing is, like, also, you've not even got enough people to put on them. So what's the point?
Yeah, you've got to build the ships. The women have got to sew the sails and then actually get on the ships as well.
He wants to get Daenerys and bring her over. So he's like, what, you're going to have, like, 3 people per ship? Mm. Like, honestly, like, it's one of those things where...
And I know we shouldn't get bogged down in stuff like that. We're supposed to just go along with it. But it's when you're that invested in a show and it prides itself on realism in other areas and war manoeuvring and tactical things based on the War of the Roses and blah, 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 blah. You can't then just go, well, 20 people are going to build a fleet of ships out of trees and fucking cotton.
And as long as everyone's wife makes a few sales, what I would have done, and it's, you know, maybe just easy to say this on the sidelines, he's traveled the world, right?
Yeah.
They've been having, so what I think you do is they vote for Yara. In the distance, a huge fucking fleet of ships come in. Euron has traveled the world. He's amassed 100,000 ships.
He's a sea
snake. Theon and Yara
run
for their fucking lives, and you've got them. Rather than go, okay, let's all get our nails, let's get our sanding paper down. It's just but, you know, it's just weird. But yeah, they sort of make it very explicit that he sort of admits to killing Balon Greyjoy. So I think we see this in season 6, but Balon, you know, Pyke is all these tall spires, and they've got these rope bridges. And he literally gets blown off one of them, right?
Yeah.
In the book. And then I think on the show, maybe he gets pushed off by someone and Euron admits that he does it. Obviously, Melisandre, when she burnt those 3 leeches, one was for Balon, one was for Rob, one was for Joffrey. So they have all died.
Yeah.
Does fulfill that a bit. But yeah, I really struggle with him. In the books, there are 3 brothers. Victarion and Balon, and then there's Euron. So there's the 4 of them, right? And they're all kind of different. Like, one of them is really religious. Euron and Victarion are sort of the most similar, but, like, I think Victarion is the one who wants to go and marry Daenerys. But one of them is, like, sort of criminally insane. He's like, if the Joker was, like, had a pirate ship. But I just, find it very hard. I think, you know, I think they're right to condense it slightly.
Yeah.
I think they're right to condense it.
But was it needed at all? You know, if they can leave out Lady Stoneheart, why bend over backwards to do this?
Well, especially because it's a confusing storyline. I think it's just complicated, and I don't love it.
You know what we've got the benefit of doing? Just going, you know what? Don't want to talk about that, so we're not going to talk about it. You know what we are going to do? I mean, we are going to introduce someone now who we're very excited. It's not often we get a Thrones alumni in. We've had Ian Beattie, we've had a couple of people. And this gentleman, I mean, it's Hodor, for goodness sake, but it is not Christian Narn. We are delighted to welcome to Dragoncast none other than young Hodor himself. It's Sam Coleman. Sam, how the devil are you, mate?
Hey, I am great. How are you guys?
I'm good.
We're good.
Oh my God, what a great microphone. What a good setup you've got as well. Look at that.
Oh, thank you.
You know what? What good casting as well, because you are looking more like Christian as time moves on. You're looking fantastic.
What a compliment. Thank you.
No face tattoos, though. No face tattoos.
No, I saw the hours that Christian has to go for every morning when he was on set to cover those up. And
well, his mum warned him, said, don't you get those things put on your fucking face, mate. Yeah. Him and Post Malone, they have a nightmare. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Sam, welcome to Dragoncast. Really, really pleased and really chuffed to have you on here. Without a doubt, this is one of my favourite Game of Thrones moments, if not my most favourite moment. It's so well written, well performed. And before we get into the specifics, give us a bit of background. How did you? Was it an audition process? Were there millions of young Hodors in a queue? How did it come about?
Yeah, so it was an interesting one actually, and I've told this story before somewhere on some podcast or other. So apologies if you've heard them before. This is a place to hear the real story. So I was 18 at the time, and the casting was for a 12-year-old. It said large 12-year-old to play a stable boy. That was the casting bracket. And so when I turned up, there was a load of 12-year-olds there with their mums or chaperones, and there was me, an 18-year-old, thinking, what has my agent done? I need to get a new agent. This is ridiculous. They're embarrassed. This is embarrassing. This is Game of Thrones, and clearly this is not right for me. But anyway, because it was Game of Thrones, I thought, well, I better audition. You know, it's Nina Gold. You don't turn down an audition for Nina Gold. So
Nina's great as well, isn't she? I interviewed her for Thronecast. And she was so charming and so like, I can imagine though as a casting director, she's legendary in as a casting director. Mm. What was she like to audition for? Was she quite terrifying?
Yeah, so it turned out I actually auditioned for one of her assistants, I think.
Okay.
I thought that was Nina Gold at the time. Turned out it wasn't. But Nina was very lovely about me in an article, I think, to Vanity Fair. She said when I walked in, it was the luckiest day of her life or something like that.
Mate.
So I was like,
she cast Kit Harington. You should take that. That's fucking amazing.
Oh, no, it's the quotes on my website. Of course I take it. I just went into that audition not thinking I'd get the role, not thinking anything of it. Perhaps I was more relaxed as a result. I don't know. I sort of just walked in and had fun.
And was that you said you'd been told you were auditioning for a large stable boy. Now, at which point was it explained to you exactly the significance of that stable boy?
Far later than I think it was meant to be. So I got the role of large stable boy. I was flown over to Belfast for a screen test, to sort of test me with all the other actors that were going to be in my scene as large stable boy. Went to the costume designer, went to the hairdresser, all of that to sort of get into costume for this large stable boy. And when I was getting the costume fitted, one of the costume fitters said, I think the older Hodor wears something a bit like this, so maybe we'll put that on. And I was like, she's got the wrong person. I'm large stable boy. So that triggered something in my brain, but I didn't think of anything of it. And it was only when I went to meet Jeremy Padeswa, who was one of the directors for episode 2, I think, of the season that I was in, and he said, have you seen the script, Sam? And I said, no, I've not been given any script. And do you know who you're playing? And I said, I think so, I don't know. And that was when he then told me, and I then rang my mum and was like, ah. So I think I was meant to find out before then, but I didn't get the memo, so.
I love that. What about, how long were you filming for? Because I know you were in a couple of the flashbacks that Bran sort of goes through, but like, were they done in quite a compact bit of time and then cut into the episodes? Or were you, could you tell us a bit more about the filming?
Yeah, so I was only there I was over in Belfast for 9 days, I think, in total.
Right.
For filming. The majority of which was actually filming episode 2, where I'm just in the background holding a horse. And that horse stepped on my toe so many times. There's also a bit, I had to carry a heavy saddle from one end of Winterfell to the other for one of the panning shots. And I don't even think you see me carrying it, but back was killing after doing that for hours. So you think rolling on the floor was intensive, but that was the real sort of donkey work. But so most of the days were filming that. And then we just did one day rolling around on the floor.
Wow. Was that the last day or was that Yeah, were they saving the intense day for last?
No, that was going to be the last day, but they wanted to get another shot from the previous scene, so we had to stay for the weekend, and then we filmed the... I think we filmed that on the Monday.
And was the big definitive moment when, you know, the past and future Hodor sort of kind of mingle together and you fall over, was that really hard to do? You have to learn how to collapse in a sort of safe way?
I did have a very brief, here's how to fall over from the stunt guy. And then he was sort of like, yep, yeah, you're fine.
You're fine, fall.
I mean, I fall over all the time anyway in life, so sort of. I'm used to, you know.
Did you have to look into, presumably it's kind of, you're drawing on the fact, it's almost like it's like an epileptic fit, is, you know, it's that kind of seizure kind of thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, both my dad and my stepsister have epilepsy.
Okay.
And my mum used to work with learning disabilities and kids with learning disabilities and things. So I've seen epileptic fits in person myself. So I think that was quite helpful. And then I did do a little bit of research. But Jack Bender, who filmed that episode, was really sort of easy with it. He was sort of like, hey, Sam, do you know what you're doing? And I sort of said, I've got an idea. And he said, let's just go with it.
Okay.
Let's just do it. Let's just see how it rolls. And he didn't give me any notes after that. So.
Were there any ways that you were going to do it differently? Like, obviously, the way that it looks is very similar to a seizure. But were there any thoughts at some point where it might have looked different when Bran is sort of in your head? Or...
I sort of had this idea that I was just going to sort of contract my muscles and sort of shake around a bit. And I was hoping I presumed someone was going to tell me that's rubbish, Sam, do this instead.
Yeah.
But apparently that was the thing that they wanted. I wish in retrospect, I decided to like be really quiet and not shout, hold the door. Cause by the end of all of the like different angles and things, I'd completely lost my voice. And I was like, why did you choose to shout on the first take, Sam?
Chris, level with me. When you watched this episode for the first time, at which point did it click what was happening? Because it wasn't until Sam had collapsed on the floor that I was just like, oh, holy shit, really? You know, it was like, it was quite late on for me. Chris.
Sorry, my audio just cut out there. Sorry, did someone ask me?
Oh, sorry, mate. I'll do that again. I'm just making note of the time. 51. Sorry. Chris, at what point did it click for you what was happening in that scene? Because for me, it was like really late.
Yeah, that's a good question. Just to answer that, so when I remember where I was when I watched this, I was actually in New York for work, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get to watch Game of Thrones while it's on live rather than watching it the next day and trying to avoid spoilers and stuff. So I was in my hotel and I think it was quite late for me to realize, because I didn't quite realize. I think the implications are so big,
yeah,
that I couldn't comprehend what was happening, because I thought if this is a big reveal in the show, I think when he collapses, when Willis, as he was known before his name change, when he collapses, that's when I realized that there was a sort of full circle thing going on.
Yeah, and the implication that Bran is not only was responsible for that it was responsible for the Three-Eyed Raven's death, that it was just mm-hmm. that actually this isn't just, it's not just memories of him kind of like popping into memories, he's actually going back in time
and affecting things.
And affecting things, which is just like, fuck, that was... And none of that's in the book, is it?
Not that we know of.
We don't know. This is my question. There's no real answer to this. This is such a well thought out thing. Like, so intrinsic, so beautifully kind of like crafted, like moment. And Hodor, the name Hodor is in the book. You know, Hodor as a character is in the book. This has to have come from George.
I think it is.
Do you know, Sam? Sam, do you know?
I think it did come from George. I remember after we filmed it, there was like that year and a bit before anyone else knew about it, where I was just like compulsively Googling, looking through Reddit threads to see if anyone had picked up any spoilers. And I think there was a Reddit thread where someone had gone into a lift with George, and they'd said something like, hold the door or something. And then someone went, oh, is that what? And George went, ah. They may have just been absolutely making that up.
Oh, wow.
No way would they have got.
I think I read that before before the news came out. So
it's a really interesting scene, though, because I think if you saw the filming of either bit, you would not know the context. So it would be very hard for a set leak to implicate what happens. Yeah, and I remember the title, The Door, I kept thinking, this is such an odd title for an episode of Game of Thrones. They're normally quite rich and evocative. And this, I thought, this is so... but it's just right there, isn't it?
The it's right there. All the, and also... You know, I love a good payoff, and this is one that's been there from episode one, season one. Yeah. So it can only have come from George's mind. Yeah, this must have been part of the chat that Daniel and David had with George. What happens? Who's John? Well, who's Hodor? Why Hodor? It's like let me tell you about Hodor. Right, there's a door. Right,
So I think from what I know, I think the door. Stannis burning his daughter and the John parentage were all when they met with George when they said, look, we're running out of book. These were three things that he told them that were like, you need to, this is what happens. That's why.
That's very cool. That's very
Sam,
cool.
Have you met George? Have you had any conversations with him about your work?
No, I've never met George. I'd love to.
Yeah.
He didn't busy writing a fucking book, apparently.
between
his anime series that must only just like take 5 minutes, you know.
Sam, what was it like for you when you actually watched it? Did you watch it live with your family? Did you sort of have a viewing party or anything like that? Or what was it like seeing it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to point out is obviously I didn't know the other half. I didn't know what Christian and that lot were filming.
Oh man,
in the present, because that was all blacked out in my script. They didn't trust.
Yeah,
any of us with all of
that's
that.
Really evil.
The only bit that wasn't blacked out was just where Mira says, "Hold the door," and that leads into my bit.
So you must have had a good idea. Did you know that Christian's Hodor was dying?
I didn't. I'd guessed that from the context of the script and that, and from the fact it seemed such a pivotal scene, but I didn't know if he'd come back as a White Walker, what would happen. So actually watching it, I watched it with some family and friends. Ironically, not as many as I'd hoped, because my mum was so excited that I was in episode two that she held a big viewing party for episode two where I'm in like...
And not the money shot.
For a few bits. And then because I wasn't in much of that and my mum had hyped it so much, I think a few people went, oh no, we can't make the next one. Thinking I was just a background character.
Mate.
So there was less people for the big thing. But I was glad of that.
The ones that mattered. They're the friends that matter now, Sam. And how did you feel watching it? Because I was genuinely moved to tears by it. It absolutely crushed me. I can remember doing Thronecast the day after. I messaged Christian after it had gone out. And Christian had been hiding because he knew what was coming. And I was just like, it was such a good payoff for such a brilliant character. You know, it was so good. And weirdly, and we talked about earlier on in the episode before you joined us about how Marvel lifted a whole bunch of stuff from this episode with regards to the theatre group and what I thought. Groot, you know, admittedly was already a pre-existing character in the comics, but the emotional anchor that Groot has in the Avengers films and the Guardians of the Galaxy films is a fucking direct lift off Hodor. Like, completely. Like, who knew that, Sam, that you would be influencing Vin Diesel in this day and age, mate?
You know, it's... I can't complain about that, can I? And every other monosyllabic character for the rest of time.
But did you feel emotional watching it? Because, I mean, you knew what was coming, but so when you first saw the other side of it, you've just been like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was as close to crying as I could be, considering that every few seconds there was a cringy bit of me rolling around on the floor. and obviously, you know, it's hard to watch yourself. But, like, I hadn't heard the score and, like, that those violins playing. I think it's the Winterfell theme. Mm. Christian, you know, the White Walkers crashing through the door. Mm. I was as close to tears as I could be, bearing in mind I was both sort of shitting myself because there's family and friends there, and I'm like, I hope they like it, I hope they like it, and... Also, there's me making a fool out of myself on screen.
Oh, wonderful.
But it was such a cool...
Could you tell me a bit more about... you said that the script, a lot of it is blacked out. So when you get a script for, like, episode 5, do you just get your scenes with key dialogue taken out? Or what do they look like?
Yeah, so I think because by season 6, It had quite a lot of spoilery issues.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to take any scripts home with us. We weren't allowed anything like that. You arrived on the day, you got your dailies, you got your sides, which was literally just a scene you were filming that day, and any bits that you weren't in were blacked out. And they'd given us like a limited context of what was happening so that we knew how to act the scene. But
Right. This is really secretive at that point.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, I'm there for a week. I'm not therefore that invested in the show technically, and I could have then gone, dear, you know.
I think it was that Richard E. Grant that was fucking selling it to the tabloids, mate.
But I think by the end, I know I did a piece on this at the time for The Guardian, that the scripts were on iPads and they wiped every day. It was just like, once you read it, it went, because it was just so like important that none of it leaked. So it's interesting just how quickly it accelerates, isn't it? Just how...
Yeah. You know. I remember when I turned up on set, the Irish taxi driver was telling me that they'd just sort of put drones up around that was the first season they'd put the drones up to try and stop people climbing over the fence and things.
I'll always love the fact that they must have spent millions on security and privacy and stuff, and yet when they burnt King's Landing, they could do nothing, but because there were literally people in the car park opposite just eating their packed lunches, just sat there watching it. Because they're just like, how do you hide that? They were just like, it was so good. Listen, Sam, what are you up to now? We know that judging by your Twitter bio, you're kind of branching out. You're getting into the world of politics. Is that right? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I was elected as a local councillor in 2019.
Look at that.
Just because, I mean, I don't want to get political.
I've got no idea what that means.
Well, it's like being an MP, but with less power and less
money,
corruption
and less corruption. Sorry, yeah.
And a lot of emails about bins. But it's election year again. So between this, I've been folding leaflets all morning, and I'll be folding leaflets after I come off of this. And then,
mate, whereabouts in the world is that? Whereabouts are you a councillor then?
So that's over down here in Sidley, in Bexhill, East Sussex.
Nice.
In the UK. Just trying to stop the Tories from destroying the world.
I mean, we have to stay back. No, we don't. Fuck the Tories. Sam, we are fully on your side. You know what? How can they even compete when they've got fucking Hodor against them? That's what I say, mate. Hold the door from the fucking Tories, please, Sam.
Yeah.
I want that on a T-shirt. That's great.
Thanks so much for coming on, buddy. How can people kind of like find out more about you and kind of say hi if they feel like it?
Yeah, just follow me on all the social medias. I'm at Sam Coleman Actor everywhere. Just in case, because I've got such good job security, I have to like tell everyone I'm an actor. I am an actor. I'm a real actor, Mum. I have got a real job.
Well, good for you, buddy. And mate, thank you for your stories. I love speaking to people, especially people that have like just had a brush with Thrones, because it means as much to you as it does to us. You've not been leathered and wizened down like some of the people that we've spoken to. Kind of like, oh, bloody Thrones. Do you get any Comic-Con?
I was a fan.
Yeah, exactly. Do you get any Comic-Con action? Have you done any of the cons?
I did up until the pandemic. I was paying my rent off of that sort of week in Belfast. But since pandemic and since House of Dragons, I think I'm a bit old news now. So
nah, mate.
My inbox is open if any cons want me.
Exactly. Listen, Sam, really good speaking to you, buddy. And
thank you.
Wish you all the best for the future, my friend. Good luck at the election.
Right. Cheers.
Oh, can we just get... Sure. Come on. Hang on a sec. You can't leave without giving us a hold the door, mate. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, of course. Hang on.
Come on!
No, now there's so much pressure.
Yeah.
Hold the door!
Yay! There we go.
That was amazing.
Sam, thank you, buddy. You. What a lovely little fella. Oh,
that's amazing. Having him like just dial in, I feel like I'm on like a radio show or something.
I know.
Or
this is like
I'm on the Big
like,
Breakfast.
I know. Oh, that was so nice. What a nice lad. And I do like, and not no disrespect to any of the people from Game of Thrones, but you speak to the people that were in for like 30 episodes or 20, and they're kind of like, oh, it's a thing, and they're jobbing actors. Sam's clearly like had this amazing experience on there, and it's one that he will remember for the rest of his life. And it's so nice that it was like such a pivotal emotional scene. Because I'd, I think it's one of my favourite scenes in the show.
I think it's one of the most impactful. I think it's one of the most tragic. I think it's also like the thing that I love is that they don't really explain it. They don't really tell it. It's just kind of this incredible accelerated human tragedy. And it's like, even when I was watching it, I was like, okay, so what happened?
Yeah.
Is it that Bran was in the past?
Yeah.
Is but it he was walking into Hodor and he sort of got into both.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. Was it was like an accidental. So Max von Sydow, the Three-Eyed Raven said, listen to your friend. And Mira was shouting, hold the door. So he had hold the door in his head. He was like, fuck, what's going on? He then tried to walk back into Hodor at the other end because that made Hodor walk up and grab the thing. But then there was like a split. But it didn't really, on the face of it, didn't serve the story at all. Didn't need to be there. Game of Thrones plotline would have continued without it, which is why I love it so much, because it was purely there as a service to wrap up a fantastic character and a fan favorite character. Hodor was such a beautiful kind of like person, really kind and like, but, and just really ramped up the, I guess if anything, it did lead into like, Bran's really got to just do this now because everybody's so invested, you know, poor Mira now dragging him through the fucking blizzard. You know, Jojen's died for him. Mira's died. Everyone's dying for Bran's cause. And now, as it turns out, not only that, Hodor lived his entire adult life locked inside his brain to make sure that Bran lived. So that was quite important.
It gives Hodor an amazing purpose and a sort of tragic arc.
Rather than him being this kind of like, fool or kind of like, you know, the way that medieval kind of films often treat people with mental illnesses or disabilities, you know, it was like, actually he's only like that. So he was just living for that 20 seconds so he could die. It was just like,
it's a sort of, the elements of it that this storyline brings up are things that aren't in Thrones really, which is like, what if your only purpose is to do something 30 years in the future? Like, they don't really get into that because the time stuff is really not something they deal with, like, on the... They sort of are very abstract with it, aren't they? But it's really powerful, and it even takes away from my main criticism, which is they spend all the time getting to that fucking cave and there's a back door.
Not only that, but there's roof lights. Yeah,
it's huge, that cave. It's like a corridor, you know. Again, listen, this is...
And they were in no rush to get going either. They were still kind of like tying up the shoelaces. A good 20 minutes after like they said, you've got to leave now. They were still kind of like, okay, fine, I'll just make some sandwiches.
Yeah. So let's have a think about this just really quickly, which is that like the job was for Bran to learn about John's parentage. Yep. That's why he's there.
For those that can't remember or haven't watched the episode, so he started off where the Willis and also did that. Was he always called Willis? What you talking about, Willis? I mean, the Different Strokes thing. Like fans of an 80s like sitcom called Different Strokes. Willis? The catchphrase in that is, "What you talking about, Willis?"
Yeah,
and that the whole of Hodor's thing was like, "What the fuck is Willis talking about?"
Yeah.
Just saying. I'm sure absolutely not, but you never know. But the what we saw was Ned being sent off by his father to the Eyrie.
Right.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, don't have a fight, but if you have a fight, win. You know, bit of Stark kind of like moral fiber being injected into him then. And that leads Bran onto that voyage of discovery that ends up at the Tower of Joy. Where he almost breaks through, doesn't he? So there's the moment where, which I don't know, and I'll talk about it now because we don't know if we'll end up watching that episode, where he sees Ned walking up the stairs to the Tower of Joy and he shouts out to him. So Bran shouts out to his dad and Ned turns around to kind of like, who said that? It was like,
And generally the idea is that he can influence what happens, and so it's very dangerous for him to do so.
It also makes it quite annoying. It's like, well, why the fuck don't you then, please? Why don't you go back
in time
just to when your dad is about to be beheaded maybe, and just kind of like kick Joffrey in the ass?
And I think that's the problem though, right, is that like he all of these, this neural network of trees, which is the sort of best way to do it if you don't know how. He doesn't really know how to do it, so it's just as likely that he'll go in back in time and stop Ned being born.
That was a good plot point. Was the three-eyed raven died before he showed him how he could do that.
But then I think in a future episode, Bran, doesn't he just touch another tree and go, oh, I've learned everything. I'm pretty sure they get to this point where they're like, God, we can't have him not know what he's doing because we need him in three episodes' time.
It's crazy that we're we're looking at Bran the fucking storyteller. No, what is he? Bran the what? Builder? Bran the broken. Yeah. And, poor Isaac, he does spend the most of his time just being shouted at by viewers, just going, fucking wake up, you twat.
Yeah. Get your contact lenses out and wake up. A thing I liked about this was, and it's been in several episodes now, his wolf, Summer, is killed. And I think that's always a very significant thing for the characters. Yeah. That's for Bran, he is no longer a Stark. His identity's been shed. And I think also Summer, name to sort of hope that they get Summer soon rather than Winter and Summer's gone, Winter's here. That's really important. Obviously, Rickon and Shaggy Dog have been... Oh, no.
Rickon's still alive. Shaggy Dog's
Rickon's still alive. Shaggy Dog's gone.
Yeah.
Osha has gone because she tries to seduce Ramsay and he sort of kills her, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Sansa's direwolf died in the second episode.
Yeah, Arya's
Arya's is still loose and feral, just like her, running around.
And we see her, don't we? And there's that really nice moment, actually. I think it's in the season seven, where they kind of see each other and she lets her, she's like, no, darling, off you pop. Go be free.
Because I think because Arya's like, I can't, I have to go and do my duty.
Yeah, I'm not
but
a star.
You don't have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Rob's got killed at the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
Sansa's one is interesting because it's like she's the one that tries to align with the Lannisters, and that's that the wolf dies. It's very like, as a Stark will lose yourself in this noxious kind of power game. So I think that's all very, I love all that. I think it's really fantastic sort of use of them. But also, you just can't have those big dogs plodding around if they've got nothing to do, can they?
I know, precisely. A lot of CGI. Look, great fucking episode. Bastards. Next week it's the Battle of the Bastards, literally.
Do you know, I am actually looking forward to it, but I think
We can give it a critical look, we can be honest. I think we'd
think also that the big thing for me, someone was actually talking to us about this on Twitter, just saying it is actually really good. Have faith, and I agree. I think for me, Ramsay, not a good character. I'm also gonna be a bit mean and say the Sansa season six stuff for me, not a fan, because I think they're trying so hard to overcompensate for last season that it just feels a bit hollow. So I think when you've got the characters that are in the center of this, I'm just not into. Having said that, I think it is probably, as a sort of piece of director-led work, choreographic, I think it's really impressive.
I'm very excited.
And there'll be other stuff in the episode.
There will be. We always forget what's in there. And it is a Sopochnik masterclass. R.I.P. Exactly. Miguel Sopochnik. He's not dead. He's just dead to House of the Dragon, I think. But there we go. That's a story for another day. We've had a few emails.
Okay.
You can relax.
You know what I'm like?
You can relax.
You know what I get like, Jamie?
I know. Steve.
Over here.
Steve Burge. Hey, Steve. Thanks very much for emailing in. Dragoncast@daftdoris.com. Thoroughly enjoyed Thronecast. I've enjoyed House of Dragons and Thrones rewatch. I was one of a handful of people who'd read George R.R. Martin's books before the TV show and really enjoyed the show over all the years, including the final series, and wasn't disappointed by the ending. Thank you, Steve. There we go. I'd still like to get the opportunity to read George's books if he ever gets around to finishing them to see what he would have done with the story, Steve. Oh, God, I don't know what to say to you, fella. He made it through the pandemic, but I'm not sure he's got two more books in them. I'm just being blunt, especially when you're fucking around with animations and things if you're his publisher, you'd just be fucking livid.
Do you know there was a rumour, and it is a rumour, okay?
That he finished it and they sent it back.
Yeah, 2014, he handed it in and it was shite.
Oh my God.
It's a very...
That's a rumour. I mean, like, unsubstantiated. We are sure that that is not what happened. Almost certainly never fucking...
But it's like...
Imagine if it did. Imagine being the person that told him in 2014 as well. The height of thrones.
Yeah. But like, wouldn't that be like just really fucking funny if it was just... It was just awful. Dear. It was just like, no, you can't print this. No. It's just like pages upon pages about feasts.
Yeah, exactly. After listening to the first few of your rewatch episodes, I took the decision to rewatch every single episode of all eight series. Steve, you're a Dragon Cast alumni. It was an absolute blast, and I picked up so many threads and little hints of what was to come that I'd missed the first time round. Rewatching the episode so closely together felt epic, and I was so keen to get to the end when I got to series eight. I watched the first four episodes back to back in one mega Game of Thrones evening blitz. Without listening to your podcast, I probably wouldn't have thought of rewatching the whole thing. So just wanted to say thanks for reminding me how exciting and thrilling the show was and how fabulous it was to watch all 73 episodes again. Keep up the great work and looking forward to the last series. Steve, we love you, mate.
What does your employer think of this? This is...
Oh, it's got an HBO email address. No, it's not. Russell emailed this morning, actually. Guys, love listening to your House of Dragon and rewatch pods for Game of Thrones. But where are the Last of Us pods? Only one so far. Thought you would have had an episode by episode pod. Ditch the OA stuff and do some Last of Us pods, please.
Thanks, ditch Russ. The OA?
Russ, appreciate that. Listen, in hindsight, maybe we should have done. We did three. We did like one previous one where we had Craig Mazin on.
Yeah.
Then we had Jeremy, who directed an episode, and then we had one last week with Gabriel.
Also, we checked in on it quite a lot. Yeah. We talked about episode three on Dragoncast, and so we have been sort of checking in.
Maybe we should have done. Perhaps we shouldn't, but we committed to the OA, and you know, people are enjoying the OA, and you know,
I would say that
The Last of Us is served very well by the official podcast. I'm not sure that there was much that we could have brought to the table, I have to say.
Yeah, I also felt, having watched it a bit less enthusiastically, I don't know if I'd have had lots to talk about week to week. It's my...
Okay, fair enough.
Having said that, I'm interested in doing a season two one.
Yeah.
And I don't think they'll fuck around with that because they are... No, they won't. Succession's ending, Barry's ending, House of the Dragon is not coming back for 2 years.
They need something.
Although,
I would argue that The Last of Us is probably as difficult to make and as expensive and as complicated to make as House of the Dragon.
But smaller cast.
Smaller cast, but I don't think they've even written it yet. You know, that's the
thing. They've said it's officially going to be split into two seasons, the next game.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Thrones done. We've got a busy week. I'm not entirely sure where we're going to fit our way in this week, but I will talk, because we're up to part two of the OA, episodes 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. Very odd episodes. Quite tricky to get your teeth into, and some might argue get enthusiastic about, but I think we might be if ever we wondered why Netflix cancelled it, these two episodes would probably go a long way to explaining it. But listen, we also have Succession starting on Sunday night in the US, Monday in the UK, and we are going to be covering that episode by episode. We are going to give that the full Jamie and Chris treatment, beginning with, we're going to do a preview episode. We're both going to the premiere of it on Thursday, which is at the British Museum in London, which sounds amazing. So we're actually going to record an on-location episode from there on Thursday.
An
emergency board meeting.
For the shareholders.
Yeah, exactly.
Dragoncast Incorporated.
Okay, so bear with us, OA fans. We will be doing it. It's just going to get a bit crazy because Thrones, we've only got one, two, three, four, five. We've only got 8 episodes of Thrones left, which is crazy to think about. We've only got 2 months of Thrones. So Thrones will finish before Succession finishes. Okay.
Yeah.
OA will be done by then. So we need to take stock and work out what we're going to do, how we're going to, basically.
I have a bold suggestion.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Final season of Thrones.
Yeah.
I think we do 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And first one is episode 1 and 2. Second one is 3 and 4. Final one, 5 and 6.
Oh, okay. Okay, I like that. I've got an even bolder episode suggestion as well. That we do the last ever Game of Thrones rewatch. We do it live on YouTube.
Love that. At your house.
Yeah.
We should do it IRL.
Yeah, let's do it in real life. I did think about doing like a live kind of Richard Herring kind of thing with tickets, but you know, who knows? It might crush our egos a bit. But we could do that in the East Cabin, and we could maybe watch the last episode whilst we're recording, and also then record.
Oh yeah,
record.
Yes, we should, and then we'll do a recording. We'll
watch along, yeah. And people can watch on YouTube. And comment, and I think can you even like maybe we could have like a phone set up with Insta where people can like request to kind of come on the Insta thing. I don't know how it works. I'm very old, but we'll think of something. It feels like we should commemorate it in some way, shape, or form. But we do need to work out what we're doing next. Otherwise, you know, Succession is only 9 weeks long. We'll end up with nowt to talk about. But look, that's why we're here. Tons of great TV. Wow, what a bumper episode you've had. 1 hour and 20-odd minutes.
Special guest. We don't have them very often.
No, we do not. Thank you so much to Sam for coming on. And Chris Mandel. Dracarys, buddy. Speak to you next time for Battle of the Bastards.
I'll see you next time. Don't forget to hold the door.
Hold the door. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@DaffDoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daff Doris production. Dracarys.